Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have UFO investigator, former police officer Gary Heseltine. Lots of questions from our listeners. Let's jump right in, Chris.
Well, this one comes from somebody that we've been kind of dogging because of his on-screen name, which was Yeti Turds for Sale. He's changed that now to Talking Meat Suit. he's one of our fairly recent additions to the forum family. But here's a really good question. He says he doesn't really have a question, but dating back to 1901 is intriguing for sure. I'd love to hear more about some of the really old, lesser-known cases. I wasn't aware that you had a case that goes back almost to the turn of the 1920th century. That's very interesting. Care to elaborate on those?
Yeah, this is a case it's a newspaper article, but the reason why I've included it is because it names the officers that were on duty, which are unusual in that kind of time frame, and it also describes what is an object that we would, in the modern day area, would say was a cigar-shaped UFO, exhibiting flight characteristics. And basically what happened in 1901 is that there are two police officers walking together on the beat in Keighley, in not actually a million miles away from where I am now, in the county of West Yorkshire, which is where I live now, and they're on walking around the town early hours, and they see a cigar-shaped object that's hovering low. There's no real noise, and they see it, and it's got a green glow to it, and then it kind of speeds off in the distance. Well, who knows what it is in 1901, and some people will speculate, oh, well, it's an early dirigible, that kind of thing. And maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but the fact was that I've done some research on dirigibles in the early 1900s, the late 1890s, etc., and there is no evidence to say that there was anything flying officially or that was known about in that time. Now, and what makes it interesting is that there's obviously a green glow and no noise. Well, the first dirigibles would have an undercarriage that would have propellers and have little motors, so they would have made noise. So, again, it's open to interpretation. We'll never know. But it's certainly an interesting sighting, and because the officers were named, I included it.
Shades of the Great Airship Wave 4 years, 3 years prior in the United States.
The 1897 wave in America is very similar.
And then several years later down in New Zealand and I think Australia.
Yeah. There was also another sighting that's on the database, again with the officer's name, of an officer in Peterborough in England, seen in 1909, seeing a large cylindrical object. But again, the research says that there's nothing flying at that time in that area. So who knows? The thing is, with historical cases, and that's why I make the difference, it's like the ancient alien kind of such stories. I think there's some very interesting cases in terms of architecture, structural engineering that I am not convinced are man-made, but in the end we're never going to know because they're simply historical and there's no way we're ever going to know. And that's the same with some UFO sightings, from 100 years ago. Yes, they're interesting, but will we ever prove whether ET or it was man-made? We'll never know. They're just open to conjecture, but they are interesting. So, that's my take on that.
Well, here's an interesting one about a case that I'm not familiar with. This comes from SLVA, who's been one of our posters since 2009 at forum.theparacast.com. And this is interesting here. Please let us know your conclusions on the 1980 Sigmund Adamski, I think, Todd Morden case. Is it true
I know about this case because it does relate to a famous British police case called that of Alan Godfrey. Now, you may have heard of Alan Godfrey because he's kind of recognised as Britain's first confirmed abduction case that fitted all the criteria. And it was a very well-known case. It went all around the world. And basically, I think November the 28th, 1980, Alan Godfrey has his sighting. Well, what happened with this Sigmund Adamski was not anything to do with the Adamski fame of contactee fame in the 50s, but basically Sigmund Adamski was, I think, a Polish immigrant to England, and basically he lived about 25, 30 miles away from Todmorden. And he basically went out one evening to go to a local grocer's shop and disappeared. Nobody knew where he went. Then what happens, Alan Godfrey's on duty in uniform when he's called to a body that's been found on the top of a coal stack. Now, what I mean by a coal stack is imagine a big load of coal being dropped and it will create this cone effect. Well, effectively, he was called to a body that was found on the top of one of these cones. And at the top of it was this body laid on its back, and it had a look of fright, apparently, on his face. And he didn't have a shirt on, but he had a jacket on, he had a vest on, he had money in his pocket, and it looked, to all intents and purposes, that he'd been dropped onto the top of this coal stack. His clothes were filthy. Now, had he had clambered up himself, he'd have got filthy in the coal dust, didn't have any dust on him. What he also had was some, like, strange circular blotch marks on his face, like sucker marks all across his face. And that I can verify that was the case. Because what happened was, Alan Godfrey goes to that, they're treating it as a murder scene. They don't know who the guy is. Within a few days, they're going round with a photograph, and he still has this photograph. He's never shown it to anybody, apart from me, I think, since he retired. But basically, I've seen this photograph, and it's got these sucker marks on the face. And it's a picture of a dead body, and they're going round the pubs, officially saying, "Do you know this man? We were trying to identify this man. Do you know who this man is?" And nobody could identify him. It then turns out that 5 days later, the person is confirmed as this Zygmunt Adamski, and he's from this village, 25, 30 miles away, and he'd gone out just to get groceries and then disappeared. Well, all the police research could not find any known link between him and Todmorden. And as far as I'm aware, there never was a confirmed link of how he got to that village, how he came onto the coal stack. Now, where it gets kind of UFO related, it was that Alan Godfrey had had his sighting, and he at one point is called many months later in to see, I think, his chief superintendent, who says, "I want you to sign this." And this chief superintendent turns over a piece of paper, and it says, "You're not to talk about your UFO sighting, and you are not to talk about the Zygmunt Adamski sudden death." Well, if there wasn't a UFO connection before, I think you could argue why put those two together and make a link there. And what also makes it a bit strange is that when the body was found, it was found with an ointment from an abrasion on the back of the neck. Now, this ointment was sent off for forensic analysis to the Wetherby Forensic Police Laboratory for forensic analysis, and on their known database of substances, they were never able to identify it, which is a bit bizarre. And this was confirmed by the coroner, who was called Turnbull, who'd done thousands of cases. And this I think it's Alan Turnbull, went on TV and said, "Look, I've done thousands of cases. This is the most bizarre case I've ever dealt with." Confirmed that this ointment had never been identified, and said, "Put it this way, if somebody told me that there was a UFO involved, I would only raise one eyebrow." Now, that for a coroner to make that kind of remark is very bizarre.
Yeah.
So there was a kind of a UFO connotation, still an unexplained case. Whether it's definitely UFO, I don't know. But it's a very fascinating case. And because it was tied to, linked to Alan Godfrey as the first officer on the scene for the body, the press made a meal of it and incorporated that into a big news headline a year after Alan had had his sighting, when I think it was the Sunday Mirror, which was then leading the UK national paper, did a two-page spread, and mixed the story up and said Alan Godfrey was involved in this UFO case and also was involved in this UFO case involving Zygmunt Adamski. So that's how that story became known in UFO circles. It was the press manipulating the situation.
Mm. A follow-up question that he has is an interesting one. It's one that I would ask as well. Have you seen a pattern emerging in the PRUFOS data that would suggest that there are certain hot spots around the British Isles? And if so, where?
Yeah, I did. Again, going back to the last real attempt I had at doing a full look at the statistics.
We'll have to look at those patterns in a moment because we have to do our break. How it goes. We have Gary Heseltine joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Gary Heseltine joining us. He has an organization called PROOFOS, is the acronym for an organization devoted to collecting a database on police UFO sightings. Chris asked you a question, Gary, in our previous segment, and I know you were about to give a long response, so please go ahead.
Yeah, basically, as I said before, I'm not a big lover of statistics, but the last time I had a pretty in-depth look was about 3 years ago, and at that time, based on the number of cases then, it basically, when I plotted them across the UK, there were the into number of counties, Scotland, Ireland, etc. The biggest county that had police UFO sightings were centred around Yorkshire as a whole, which is where I live, and also the fact that when you looked at Yorkshire in policing terms, in UK geographical terms, is divided into three: West Yorkshire, South Yorkshire and North Yorkshire. Each have their own respective police forces, but in the West Yorkshire was the, where I live, was the biggest concentration of police UFO sightings on the database, followed then very closely by South Yorkshire and North Yorkshire. So Yorkshire as a whole was a hotspot. Now, I think there are some anomalies to that in the sense of, I researched Alan Godfrey's story when I launched the database. One of the questions I always ask of the police officers that I research is, well, has any other police officer told you about a sighting? And quite a few of them say, well, yes. And I say, well, what's their name? Can you get me the telephone number? And it kind of leads me to another one. So you get that one, and then you say at the end of that process, do you know of any other places? Yes. And you can have a little chain. And with the Alan Godfrey, it led to about a spate of another 8 or 9 sightings, which, had I not gone to Alan Godfrey, the figures wouldn't have gone up proportionally, if you see what I mean. So, yes, I think overall it still is the highest concentration of UK police sightings, but there are some slight anomalies.
That's interesting, and it's also interesting to be right where you live, too. That kind of makes it a little bit more convenient, I guess, and I bet you
You think about the synchronicities of how I've got involved in this subject.
Right. That makes sense.
I moved to Yorkshire, and I set up the database. I get involved in part due to a magazine that was based and printed out of Leeds, where I worked. How it could have been anywhere in the UK. I wouldn't have been able to call in and see them then. So it's strange. And when I launched the database, Alan Godfrey lived about 25 miles away near Todmorden. So, of course, he was going to be one of the first officers I contacted because I'd read about him in books. So, you know, that's kind of strange.
Well, here's a question from one of our longtime posters, Bernd State, at forum.theparacast.com. And Gary, in your experience of sightings that involve both police and civilian witnesses, how often do reports match, and how often is there a disparity between what the witness saw versus the police officer? And if there is a high degree of disparity between these two sets of witnesses, how do you account for that?
Well, I think you have to understand the nature of witness testimony. And I'm an advanced witness, interviewer of witnesses and suspects. So I've had psychological training in how to get suspects to talk or get them more chance of them talking. Also, I've been taught a method called the enhanced cognitive method of retrieving information from witnesses. So these are special techniques that are the highest you can go. And basically, in terms of the police. Now, when you look at testimony per se, the skeptic will always say, oh, yeah, well, there's so many disparaging things, you know, there's anomalies between what people have said. Everybody's, 100 people could look out of their bedroom window now at the same thing and they'd all come back with things that are slightly different. Some would say they saw a person running past the house in a red jumper. There's somebody run past in a blue jumper. Some would say there were two people running past. But the essential element in all of this is, despite the fact that there are minor differences, the story of a person or somebody running past is the key. So you have to accept that people's testimony can vary slightly. Their descriptions. You can have people that say it was a black guy, a Chinese guy, and it's clearly just an ordinary white Caucasian male. But in that short time frame, people can get things wrong. But the essential element of what's happened, I saw that man stab and then run away, is the evidence, key evidence bit. So perceptions can change. But that said, when we look at UFO sightings, there are many cases on the database that were reported in the media, and because the media, members of the public, had rang up the newspapers in fright saying, I can see this strange light. Well, who have you told? Oh, we told the police in the area alongside of us. So you have quite a lot of cases where initially members of the public ring in, they in turn, it gets to the police turn up, and the officer goes, well, actually, I can see it too. And there generally is a correlation between, basically, they corroborate what the people are saying. You don't generally have a situation where a member of the public will say, I'm looking at an egg-shaped object over there, and the police turn up and go, I can't see anything. No, there are lots of cases that are in print where officers have gone on record making comments saying, yeah, I saw this cigar-shaped object. you know, I went to it not thinking I'm going to see anything, and I saw things. There is a correlation that says generally what people are reporting are bona fide. I kind of think that over the years, my 11 years of research, I also get members of the public ringing me, and whilst I don't put them on a database, I do kind of log a lot of these, especially the more better sightings, and within minutes I can tell if somebody's genuine or not, that they're recalling a real event. Ultimately, because I'm not there, it's harder to speculate definitively what they've seen. But what is important is that if somebody says to me, yeah, I watched this object and it was over this house, and then suddenly it shot straight up vertically in the air at speed in the blink of an eye. Now, I know that that is one of the genuine characteristics of what I would say ET craft after 60 years of research is. There are probably 8 genuine characteristics, which are effectively instant acceleration, instant stop. So the inertia factors there we can't do. The stop on a sixpence, as we would say in England. Reversals in flight, so instant acceleration, point stop, reversal in flight. Right angle turns, vertical ascent at high speed, vertical descent. The ability to render themselves visible, the ability to render themselves invisible. And effectively most operate with no noise whatsoever. I think that's 7 or 8. But these are characteristics that I think are borne out by genuine cases. So if somebody says, well, I'm watching this thing and it's making right angle turns in the sky, they may only have seen it for 30 seconds, but if they're accurate and they're especially corroborated by other people that are saying, yeah, we saw this thing making weird patterns in the sky, well, planes can't do that. You know, microlights can't do that without noise, and they can't do it quickly. But when people are making the same 90-degree turns, things like that, you're thinking, well, on the balance of probability, you've probably seen something that veers more towards unexplained in ET. Now, I don't accept, in this modern era, this concept of unexplained. It's not good enough, and the media accept and write off good cases by just saying, yeah, it was unexplained after investigation. Well, if you just said that to a member of the public, that kind of infers that there's not a lot to it. But if the case like Colonel Oscar Santa Maria is unexplained, what a travesty of justice that would be.
I want to say something about whether unexplained is not important or not significant, then we go on. I don't want to quibble with words, but I'll mention that. We have Gary Heseltine joining us, answering your questions, listeners. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
What if you had a witness everywhere you drive? Now you can with video-cam.com. From truckers to motorcyclists, the handy video dash cam can be used for insurance claims, accidents, police encounters, road rage, or natural disasters. Has instant screen playback and optional night vision. Get the best quality, affordable HD dash cameras available at video-cam.com. That's video-cam.com. Or call 855-855-2022. Always have a witness with video dash cam.
We the people grow cotton. Weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Before Chris gets back to the questions, I wanted to just mention one thing, Gary Heseltine. That is, because something is unexplained doesn't mean it's not significant. It means we don't know what it is, but it's doing all sorts of weird things, and we have to figure it out. I don't think that denigrates the value of a case. If anything, it just means there's a mystery we have to figure out.
Yeah, but I think that when you deal with, say, a pilot case, especially where it's a pilot case that's corroborated by other pilots, ground radar, airborne, we should be making more of a determination that gives a guesstimate of what it is. It's, to me, it's a cop-out for the press to say, well, it's unexplained. Yes, it is technically unexplained, but we have to make a best guess as to what it points towards. And what I mean by that is you have to rule out what it is and what it isn't. And you should go through that process. And if you get to the end of ruling out all conventional, atmospheric, blah, 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 in these really exceptional cases, you shouldn't be afraid to say the circumstantial evidence points towards an exotic, unknown machine that does not appear to fit with our modern knowledge of physics and characteristics, and I think that points towards ET. That's my take on it. We should make a best conclusion.
Well, I think one of the arguments we make on the Paracast is that a lot of what you say is correct, but we're not ready to say it's ET. That may be pushing it a little bit over the edge, but that's a difference of opinion. Chris, another question, please.
Well, this is another question from Burton State. And again, this is the kind of question that I would ask. I think it shows some real insight on his part. Do cases involving close proximity between the officer and the UFO produce more distorted, bizarre reports with, let's say, time lapses, strange sounds, and or some sort of disjointed narrative compared to the more distant witnessing of an object just flying by in the sky? It's a good question. And his follow-up is also interesting. If proximity is a factor in producing reports of high strangeness, what do you think is going on and causing these events? Could these have been the result of hallucinations because of some sort of energy being produced by these craft? That's kind of my little addition at the end there. In how many good quality close proximity cases approximately do you have?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't quote you an accurate figure, but I can think of many, many cases that I would consider close proximity. What I mean by close proximity would be within a few hundred metres, 200 metres, 300 metres, some less than 100 metres. So there are plenty of cases like that. As to the effect, then I can say only in a two or three cases are officers affected in the sense of what they described to me kind of leaves them that there's the possibility of some missing time, but the couple of cases I can think of, the officers have not been wanting to go down that route at all. It is too problematical. They don't want to address that rightly or wrongly. So fair enough. What I would say is, so in the vast majority of cases, in the close proximity cases, there's no effects that I'm aware of. But what sometimes happens, and this has been described in, I think, at least half a dozen cases that I can think of, is that police officers will see an object. They'll go through this rational process of thinking, oh, it's a plane. Is it a plane or is it a helicopter? They'll go through what it can be and then kind of think, nah, it's not that. And then eventually they'll realise that they're dealing with something strange, and something they say, it's their words, will compel them to flash the car headlights at them or to shine a torch at them. And sometimes when they've done that, the object reacts by either moving close in an instant or backing away in an instant, as if there's a recognition communication factor. But beyond that, no.
It's interesting because I've found that as well, that people tend to be more amazed and more impressed the closer they are to a particular object, especially in daylight. But I haven't really – I only have a handful of cases that have any sort of physiological – apparent physiological effects from close proximity to a craft. Yeah. Here's one from one of our German posters, Polterwurst. He's been a longtime poster here at the Paracast, and he says, hello, thank you very much for coming on the show and for your outstanding work. What do you think is the number of police reports which are genuinely unexplainable that have never been made public in relation to those that do? In other words, how many cases do you think you're actually getting out of the ones that could possibly be there? Do you have a sense of maybe, you know, I've heard the number bantered around 1 out of 10 UFO sightings are actually reported. Do you have a sense of how many police officers are not coming forward with sightings?
No, I think I would probably agree with you in the 1 in 10. And the two common reasons that are absolutely loud and clear, and I think it's echoed by any other kind of profession, is that stops officers coming forward is the fear of ridicule is the primary.
Right.
And then a secondary, which is a perceived risk to their career, i.e. look what happened to me kind of thing, that it can impact on you. And certainly Alan Godfrey, when you go back to that abduction case in 1980, when he was getting national publicity, the West Yorkshire Police turned on him something chronic to the point where he was suing the force. But in the end, he had to drop it because he couldn't risk losing and losing his house. They were made his life very difficult for the remainder of his service, much more so than ever hassle that I got. Mine's nothing as compared with the hassle that Alan got. So, yeah, generally speaking, I think that it's a factor, but I don't think it's very easy to make that determination.
No, obviously, it would just be an educated guess. But his follow-up question is, what are the reasons police officers give when they do relate their stories to you and they do come forward? Why don't they remain silent about them? They must know what it does to their, you know, potentially will do for their reputation and social standing, as we were just talking about. What are some of the reasons that officers give when they actually file a report?
Well, you move into two areas there. You move into the on-duty sighting that is reported officially, or you're talking about an on-duty sighting that, because of its high strangeness, is not reported and stays with the officer for many years. They don't tell anybody. I've had several officers, several different cases, have said to me, I only found out about your database by accident. I'm amazed that there's a police database like this. You probably think I'm going to be crazy, but I'll tell you my story. So once I've convinced them that I am who I say I am and that I'm a bona fide police officer, as was, then they relax and they talk, and they basically will say, look, I haven't even told my wife this, but me and a colleague in 1966 saw this, and that kind of story. So you can have stories. I've had many cases where multiple witness cases of, like, the two officers in the police car will say, right, we're never going to talk about this again. And they don't tell their wives, they don't tell their families, and then they find out about me, and then one of them will ring me up and say, well, we have this story, and here's the details of my man who can come corroborate that. So I think that's actually very common. I've had police officers almost in tears with the relief, as it were, to finally be able to tell their story without this fear of ridicule and retribution to their career. One particular case I can remember, he was almost in tears, and I spoke to him for 2 hours on the go, and it was almost a cathartic experience. It was almost as if I was acting as a stress counsellor, and he was unburdening himself with this thing.
Believe me, I know that feeling. Yeah. I've had that happen a bunch.
You know, so a lot of people, because of this fear factor, refuse to come forward. I sense that it's the tip of an iceberg, what I've accomplished. I think what I do could be set up by, in every country of the world, so you could have a police database by ideally a serving or a retired officer, so you've got that kinship element to get the officers to feel confident about coming forward. I mean, the thing is that the frustration is that as I've become more well-known and the numbers have grown into the hundreds, many hundreds, what should have happened in a, what you would say in an open media, is that I should have got more well-known, the figures should have been more widely reported in the mass media, so therefore more people would know about me, therefore the odds are that more officers would come forward. Well, actually, the more I've become well-known, the more the figures have come forward, the press don't want to go near me. Now, you've got to ask yourself, logically, without being a conspiracy theorist, why that is. And the most logical answer is they don't want to know and they don't want to tell the people just right. how many good cases there are. And the press have a total clampdown on the media.
I'll tell you what, let's do our break. We have Gary Heseltine joining us with Gene and Chris. More of your questions coming. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to dreamhost.com/radio, dreamhost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel Body Armor can stop every round, including hollow points and .308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L, BodyArmor.com. Infidel Body Armor. Just won't quit.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. freezedryguy.com.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract and have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. I was also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hvextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hvextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Gary Heseltine. He is a former police officer who has a database on UFOs, and of course he's got a new magazine called UFO Truth. He'll tell you about later. But right now it's Gene and Chris. Chris is asking questions from you listeners, and we only have a few minutes left, so let's just get right to them. Chris?
Well, this comes from a real active ufologist from Calgary, Canada, calls himself Ufology. And the question is, as a trained detective, in your experience, Gary, what percentage of reports have turned out to be proven to your satisfaction to have been hoaxes? And can you please give us an example of such a hoax and what to look for during an investigation that would give it away as a hoax, other than the obvious, you know, model hanging from a string scenario?
What you've got to understand with my research is that when I was a serving officer, I was a detective, so I was very busy. So what I would say was I was a UFO researcher, and that meant that cases were coming to me. I would not have called myself a UFO investigator because I did not have the time to go out there and interview all the people I would naturally do in a kind of a policing investigation. So there's a slight difference, and that's something that I want to do now I've retired, that I can get my teeth into using my detective acumen skills, if you will, in more active cases, so that I will become the investigator. But to answer your question, the investigation side, I always speak to people in isolation, separate them. If there are multiple witnesses, I always speak to them separately. I always verify who they are. I take notes. I do verification checks on who these people are. I get them to send photographs to me in the uniform. They have to give me a certified declaration that they're telling the truth, all this kind of thing that kind of makes this up. What I can honestly say, in all of my 11 years of research, I think on only one occasion, as a police officer contacted me who I thought is questionable, and it's not on the database. So only one out of hundreds.
Wow. Okay.
Right?
And that's a real... Well, you would figure, I mean, law enforcement officials are... I mean, their whole life is based on ascertaining the truth. You know, I was hoping that I'd hear you say this, because it's the exact opposite. Coming forward with a hoax, to me, is just not in the personality profile.
No, for a police officer to go public or approach me, it's because they've got something real that they want to say. Many times are historical accounts. Most of the time it's retired officers who've got the pensions, feel less threatened. The serving officers that approach me, they generally want to be anonymous. And that's fine. They're a source to me. As long as I've checked them out and they are who they say they are, then I'll protect them as a source. And why not? Because I'm keen to get these real stories out there. Even of all the members of the public that have contacted me over the last 11 years of research, the percentage of people that I thought these are just nutters, completely out of it, is very, very tiny, 2%. Very few. The vast majority of people you can tell within minutes as a trained investigator whether they're recalling real events or they're just making it up on the fly. So the answer is not what the press will say, that there's a lot of hoaxing goes on. I think nationally, what's the figure that they say in UFOs, 8%? Well, I think it's even less than that. I think for anybody to approach a researcher, or certainly a police officer in my case, they obviously know that they're going to get scrutinised a bit. I think very few people would approach me with anything other than a credible story.
Yeah, and I've found that too, that very, very few people actually knowingly have attempted to hoax me in my work. I've had quite a number of people approach me not being able to really accurately determine what it is that they're looking at, just mistaken impressions, that sort of thing, which happens all the time.
If what they described to me, I said, well, you've probably seen a Chinese lantern. If that's what it looks like, obviously I wasn't there, blah, blah, blah. But I'll call it as I see it. Not everything that comes in, I think, is ET. I look at each case on its merits. But just going back to you there, there was an occasion where I believe somebody tried to put major disinformation to me, and it's what Charles Hall talked about in your recent broadcast with Leslie Kane. And he didn't name me, but he said a friend had basically been approached. I was the officer, I was the person he was talking about when this radar guy came forward with me and asked and said he was at Rendlesham and blah, blah, blah. And
this Wilson character that was on Coast to Coast with the claim?
So it's me that originates from. And basically what happened was that he came across with all this information and he sounded really credible. It was a very detailed set of information. Not overly sensationalistic, which I think added to its credibility initially. And then I started to do what any detective should do. I threw back a load of clarification questions. He then responded. And what I went on is a banter over a few days of 7 emails, I think it was in the end, where I'd asked very specific, detailed information to scrutinise what he was saying and clarify. And basically at the end of it, I said, okay, you appear to have got some very detailed information. I need now for you to prove to me who you are so that I can verify who you are so then I can talk about this case publicly. And as soon as I went back and said, right, verify yourself to me, you can be a source, but I've got to know exactly who you are and vet you and know that what you say you are is who you say you are. And as soon as I did that, nothing further. I talked to Grant Cameron about it, and I talked to Robert Salas about it, and I told Charles Holt about it. And of course, with him being in America, he's got his links to intelligence, or rather links to people who can trace things in America, which I don't have. And in the bottom line is we can't find him. But at the end of it, as Charles Holt said, my gut feeling was that there's some truth to what he said, but his role was bogus. And I think that he tried to see if I would put out this information unverified as a test to me as a researcher. Would I just fall for it hook, line and sinker? And the bottom line, I didn't, and I did my job properly. And as soon as I asked the hard question, he backed off and never heard from him since.
Yeah, I refuse to put into my database any sort of, a person that comes forward and doesn't, produce bona fides of who they are. I need to be totally certain that I am dealing with a known entity. And absolutely. And I've never really had a problem with that, because people who have genuine experiences are generally not afraid to if you're going to promise anonymity to them, let's say,
absolutely,
they will come forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, in a sense, goes back to this wider issue. In an ideal world, what I'd like to see from an evidential point of view is that we should have an organisation for pilots all around the world. You've got NARCAP in America, but in a sense, each country should have a pilot group, a police group, a radar operators group. And if we really got our act together as researchers and got people on board, we'd have a million more times evidence than what we've actually got, because we'd have specialists in these key areas getting more specialists to come forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I think coming with an approach that features people who are inside a particular category or group, like a pilot, Richard Haynes doing NARCAP, yourself doing law enforcement, maybe astronomers should have an Alan Hynek filing away, or a Jacques Vallée filing away reports from astronomers. But this has been really fascinating, Gary, and I really look forward to continue to get to know you and follow your work. And again, my hat's off to you. It's been a really courageous thing that you've done. I'm glad you have gotten through fairly unscathed here. And I'm one of your biggest fans, and I know you're going to be back on the Paracast as a reoccurring guest, and I'm sure the folks out there are really going to enjoy listening to you on this show.
Well, I appreciate that. I welcome the opportunity to talk about this subject. Hopefully what you will get from me is somebody who's very passionate about it, and I think that always comes through, or that's what people always tell me. I am very passionate about this. You know, I'm definite in my circumstantial evidence based, you know, lots of people go to prison without the body being found for murder on a circumstantial case. And this is how I look at it in policing terms, that the case for UFOs has been ET. My personal opinion is that when you look in the high caliber witness categories, based on the circumstantial evidence of the best cases, like the pilots, the astronauts, cosmonaut comments, etc., etc., the circumstantial evidence, the majority says to me that this leans towards ET. That's why I'm happy to say it. Can I prove it? Definitively no. Can anybody? No.
I'm going to ask you very quickly, where can our listeners find more of your information?
Right, go to www.ufotruthmagazine, written as one word, .com. And the website's up and running. There's a 9-page sampler issue that you can download for free. And the first issue out is going to be bi-monthly. It's now going to be 96 pages. Initially, I was looking at 84 because it's online. I've got enough material. It's going to be a 96-page bi-monthly. It's got the best, my opinion, the best researchers around the world.
Okay, we can find us on theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. The Paracast is on Twitter, on Facebook, and Chris O'Brien's site is OurStrangePlanet.com. OurStrangePlanet.com. Gary Heseltine, thank you so much for joining us this week on the Paracast.
Thank you very much.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast. The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Hi, my name is Stephen Heuer. As a degreed nutritionist, my first priority is for you to get healthy. That won't happen if I make wrong recommendations or cause you to spend money on supplements you don't need. After 20 years working with thousands of products and thousands of people, I know, for the most part, what does and does not work. One World Whey is the first and only unheated whey protein powder from grass-fed cows on the market. It retains substances that no other whey protein powder has. These nutritive compounds supply life-giving nutrition. Your body merely needs the right conditions to make great health happen. Due to low-quality foods, toxicity, and aging, having great health is more of an effort than ever. One World Whey is the superfood of the century, and when added to your diet, it promotes energy, detoxification, muscle gains, fat loss, and overall radiant health. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.